Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
This is Veronica Monet, and welcome back. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you recall, last week we were discussing my life history, and before I get into that again, and also answering questions about sex, I just wanted to take a little time to acknowledge some of the violence and unrest that's going on rest of part of the world. I'm here in the U.S. I'm not entirely sure where all of my listeners are. I know some of you are up in Canada, but you can log on anywhere in the world at bbs.com. So you may be listening from India or Thailand. Anyway, I actually have friends in Bangkok and friends in India. It seems like most of the people I've talked to today, however, aren't actually in Mumbai. But for those of you who don't know, there's I think the death toll's at a little over 150 today. It was a terrorist attack in Mumbai, India. And a lot of people injured, over 300 people injured. So anyway, just want to send out special thoughts and prayers for the people in India, as well as the people in Bangkok, Thailand. And for those of you who don't know it, the Democratic Republic of the Congo is also having a really hard time, and that's of particular interest to me because I support the Bonobo Conservation Initiative, and they work exclusively in the Democratic Republic of the Congo trying to save the remaining members of the bonobos. And if you've never heard of what a bonobo is one of our closest living relatives. It's a primate that looks very much like a chimpanzee, and it has nothing in common with a chimpanzee. It's evolved in a totally different direction, and the most striking difference between a chimpanzee and a bonobo is that the bonobo is a very peaceful creature, whereas the chimpanzee is incredibly violent. Chimpanzee engages in infanticide, rape, murder, and war. Jane Goodall actually documented a 4-year war with African chimpanzees. So the bonobos, the worst they've ever been documented doing is biting off somebody's finger. So that's a far cry from ripping off arms and legs and drinking your opponent's blood, which is what chimpanzees do. Now, you might wonder what that has to do with sex. It has a lot to do with sex, actually. The bonobos have learned to cope with their frustrations and their emotions with sex. So, for instance, a couple of competing tribes of chimpanzees were fighting over a field of sugar cane. The chimpanzees would murder each other. They would engage in a long, bloody war. And I'm really talking about stuff here that you might think only human beings do. You know, they actually do things like genital mutilation, which is interesting since human beings also have a penchant for doing that when they're fighting wars. And it's interesting particularly because it seems that some of the impetus for violence actually does spring out of sexual frustration. And the bonobos engage in frequent sex. They engage in every type of sex that is known to human beings. I mean, they have fellatio and cunnilingus and lesbian sex and gay sex. And, you know, the scientists are really squeamish about calling what they do by any of the names that we have for human sex, which I think is so interesting. So if a couple of female bonobos get together to have sex with each other, they try to call it GG rubbing because, you know, we got to coin a new term for it. God forbid we should just call it lesbian sex, but that's what it is. The bonobos have prostitution. Of course, they're not the only animals that have prostitution. Adelie penguins have prostitution, and so do certain insects and hummingbirds. But this solution to violence that the bonobo has found goes in two directions, actually. It starts with the fact that female authority in the community is very much respected, and in particular, we're talking about the older females. So I like to call that grandmother wisdom. So they have an immense amount of respect for the older females. And in some ways, their political structure is really reminiscent of the Iroquois Indians. The Iroquois Indians are a northern seaboard tribe, and actually they're a collection of six nations at this point. They started off five nations and then became a confederacy of six nations on the eastern seaboard of the North American continent. And the Iroquois always had a system put in place where they had a chief who was in charge and was the designated leader, but the grandmother, there would be a grandmother who was selected to have veto power. So it was a system of checks and balances, not unlike this current system that the United States operates under, and when you know it, that's pretty much where the founding fathers got the system. They got it from the Iroquois. However, they dispensed with the whole idea of honoring grandmother wisdom. So we got really out of balance here, and it's, you know, all about patriarchy and male dominance, and we lost that. We lost this wonderful balancing of male and female energy that used to be part of the indigenous cultures here on this continent. Certainly, the Europeans did not bring that mentality with them. And that's why our country didn't embrace that. As a matter of fact, a lot of the Native American tribes had female leaders who could not gain an audience with any of the European leaders. So over the course of a couple hundred years of occupation of this continent, you go from having Native American cultures that had this balance between male and female power basically dispensing with it because there was no way that they could negotiate with the white people who had come to this continent. And then the history becomes lost, and pretty soon even Native Americans can't remember when they respected and valued the wisdom of their grandmothers. And, of course, some of them still do today, but I'm just saying overall there was this loss of that history and of that culture. But anyway, checks and balances is what it's all about, and really when you think about sex, sex is very much about male and female energy as well, and finding checks and balances between that, those two opposing forces, if you want to look at it that way, tends to have a lot of wonderful side benefits. So the grandmothers are respected in bonobo culture, and the other thing that happens, and this happens in almost any culture that has respect for female authority, and it's very interesting that usually the culture will become sex positive. So, for instance, the Muswa in China, there is a very small community of Chinese called Muswa, and they have kind of remain timelessly unaffected by what's going on in the rest of the planet. Their culture is set up so that it's matrifocal. The property and money go from female to female. And the women do not marry, and they do not engage in monogamous long-term relationships either. They live alone, and they often form partnerships with their brothers, not sexual partnerships, just partnerships for the sake of raising their children and running their farms and their households. So when they want to have sex, maybe have a baby or just have sex, they just take a lover for the night. And that's it. They expect that guy to be gone by morning. So it's very funny because the rest of China can't cope with this lifestyle. They don't understand these women. So they have labeled them prostitutes. Now, they're not charging for sex, so they're not prostitutes. But it's interesting because people outside of the Muswa community, Chinese people, ended up opening up brothels just outside of Muswa, and they lie to the tourists and try to tell them that the women that are working in these brothels are authentic Muswa women, and because they're all assumed to be prostitutes because they don't marry, which is actually the way pretty much the rest of the world thought of women who didn't get married. If you take us back a few hundred years ago, that was the whole idea. If you weren't married, you weren't living with your parents, then you were some type of a sex worker. So, anyway, the Muswa are matrifocal. They don't marry. They have sex whenever they feel like it. And they're also a very peaceful community. They don't have any violence. They don't have any war. If you look at some of the ancient cultures, we go back far enough, and when I say back, I mean, sometimes you got to go back about 6,000 years to the artifacts that predate written history. Written history is very much dominated by patriarchy, but if you go back far enough, you're going to find these ancient cultures that worshipped the female body. They've been able to find a lot of figurines, like the goddess of Wallendorf, who is all about fecund. You know, she's very fecund. She's got huge, ample breasts and large hips and a big swollen belly because she's pregnant. And that was something that was worshipped. If you think about it, that makes perfect sense because before we had all this modern technology, the most exciting thing going on planet Earth was either a volcano, an eclipse, or childbirth. And it was a pretty amazing thing, you know, when human beings, before they even started figuring out where babies were coming from and they didn't understand why there were babies, it was a miracle. These other people would come out of the women's bodies. Their bellies would grow, and then out would come a human being. And then the women would nurture that human being with fluid from their own bodies. So women were seen as incredibly sacred and incredibly powerful and mysterious and magical. And we lost all of that when patriarchy was taking over, and not without some bloodshed. You know, we had the 300 years of persecution of women who were called witches. Sometimes to be called a witch as a woman, all you really had to do was live alone. And, you know, that was suspect. If you owned property and had money and lived alone, you were a witch. There was one woman who was killed for being a witch because she invented surfing. You know? She took a board and rode some waves, and she died being called as a witch. Interesting thing about the way that the witches were persecuted was, again, you get back to this thing of the inquisitors from the Catholic Church are stripping the witches naked and accusing them of having sex with the devil, and they're torturing their genitals in order to get a confession from them. And, you know, nowadays, we actually, if you stop short of actually killing that person, there's scenes like this taking place in dungeons for pay all across America, and we call this BDSM. It's a type of sex. It's bondage, discipline, and sadomasochism. So when the Catholic Church, and I am very definitely specifying them because they were the ones who released a document, this horrible, horrible document, which was gave detailed descriptions about how one should discover a witch, how one should torture a witch, and how one should kill a witch. And this was a type of sex. It's interesting what happened to, you know, the celibacy that was being forced upon the priesthood, and the really negative attitude towards sex that was being, you know, made part of the doctrine, part of the religious doctrine that the other good Catholics had to ascribe to, that this ends up kind of twisting our natural sexual drives, and I'm not saying that BDSM is unnatural, but when you end up killing people, it certainly is. And if you're going to derive some kind of satisfaction out of stripping somebody naked, torturing their genitals, and then murdering them, that is a really, really horrific sex crime. And it would be prosecuted as such today. But during that time in history, when they were burning and persecuting people who were labeled witches, this was considered a very holy, righteous thing to do, something you were doing for God. So I really do believe firmly that when we don't honor our sexuality and when we allow it to live cloistered in shame, then we are inviting these kind of aberrations. And if you look at that, it's not such a leap to start understanding how sexual frustration can actually result in violence as well. So anyway, whether or not having a more positive attitude towards sex would actually result in less violence in the world or not remains to be seen. However, what fascinates me is here we have our closest genetic relative, the bonobo, which has achieved a lot of sexual promiscuity, a very, very sexually active, sexually promiscuous group of primates, and no violence. And why it is that we, while, you know, we have all of this horrific violence going on one-on-one and you know, gang violence and war, murder and war, rape, murder and war, we still refuse to look at our closest living relative for any kind of solutions. I think it's reckless. I think it speaks volumes about how we would rather do anything but find out that we need to change our attitudes towards sex. It is such a big taboo with us. We'd rather go down in flames. So anyway, that's the bonobo. Look it up on the internet if you get a chance. B-O-N-O-B-O. Bonobo. And if you're interested in supporting the cause to save the bonobos, there's not that many of them. There's far fewer bonobos than there are gorillas or chimpanzees. Then you can also go to bonobo.org. Bonobo.org. That's the Bonobo Conservation Initiative, BCI, one of the few organizations that is working exclusively to save the bonobo. Okay. Enough about that. I want to spend the rest of our time actually answering people's questions about sex and relationships. So these are real live questions. I get a certain number of these every day. I absolutely love answering these kind of questions, and I will answer your first question for free. So if you have some questions that you want to send my way, you can actually get an answer to your first question free of charge, and as long as we do it by email, that's fine with me. And the other thing that you can do is arrange to sample what I do. If you're thinking you might want to make appointments with me over the phone, then you can make an appointment to just talk or email me your phone number. We don't even need an appointment, and I will call you back, and we can talk for about 10 minutes, and you can kind of get a sense of how it is that I work with people over the phone. But last week, we talked about premature ejaculation. The week before that, we talked about this really cute quote. I just thought it was wonderful. This guy says, "I'm horny, but I want to go to heaven. Help." It's interesting. I was watching a religious show just before I came on tonight, and it's just, you know, the shame. It's a lot of mainstream religion right now is talking about sex in the context of marriage, which I think is fabulous. I think it's wonderful. As a matter of fact, a lot of religious people are starting to talk about the bonobos. A friend of mine who's a chaplain, I volunteered with him some in the women's prison here in California called Chowchilla Prison last Christmas. We held services for the women. He told me, "I thought you were nuts. You kept talking about these monkeys." They're not monkeys. They're actually apes, but that's okay. He says, then I go down to this religious conference in Southern California, and it's like there's this, you know, pastor who had written an entire paper on the bonobos. So I think it's kind of in the ether that people are starting to look at this whole idea that maybe there is something wrong with our attitude towards sex, and I think that's awesome. But at the same time, I get very annoyed at, you know, like this minister on this television evangelist that I was listening to was kind of shaming his parishioners even further, like, you know, what's wrong with you? You're married. Why don't you keep the lights on when you make love? And he's going through the Psalms and Proverbs and picking out, you know, some sexy verses out of the Bible to help support his premise that the married people need to start enjoying sex more. And I think that's great and that's wonderful, but, you know, it would be helpful if we could acknowledge where this sexual shame originates. I mean, it originates with religious leaders. It originates with religious doctrine. And when I'm working with people who are trying to get past sexual shame, oftentimes that is the first thing we have to do, is kind of get a handle on what messages were transmitted through one's family of origin, and in particular the religion that your family of origin ascribes to. So, for instance, I grew up in a very small Christian cult, which preached that sex was great in the context of marriage, but outside of the context of marriage, it was evil and bad. And it was also, you were only allowed to do certain things, like the missionary position, absolutely no oral sex. Oh, that'll get you into hell real quick. And, coincidentally, we got a question here from a female person. She sent me an email and said, I am having difficulty letting go of whatever still holds my body incapable of orgasm through cunnilingus. And her history involved some sexual abuse issues. So this is not an uncommon thing. I'm an incest survivor and also was date raped a couple of times. So I know that this is pretty tricky terrain to go from being frigid to being multiply orgasmic, and I have been very fortunate to have made that journey to actually go from being frigid to multiply orgasmic. And it's hard work. I mean, you might say, oh, well, it sounds like a lot of fun to get there, but really seriously, if you have been sexually abused or raped, it's not that much fun. It's pretty traumatic trying to get past those blocks. But the good news is that it is entirely possible to do. So one of the first steps that I absolutely positively recommend is that, you know, you want to get into some kind of acknowledged, licensed psychotherapy if you have been sexually abused in any way, shape, or form, especially if you're an incest survivor. You know, you want to not only get into therapy, but find a therapist who specializes in incest, because it's pretty long, rough road. It's not easy. There's a lot of things that incest survivors do. They either become kind of numbed out and develop an addictive relationship with sex, or you're having a lot of meaningless sex just to try to feel loved, or incest survivors will go the opposite way and put on a whole bunch of weight on and wear baggy clothes and chop all their hair off and try to be as asexual as possible. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen the thing on Saturday Night Live, it's called Pat. A few years back, they had this character, Pat, and everybody was trying to figure out what gender Pat was. And a lot of times, incest survivors will kind of aim for that. It's like, you can't tell if I'm a boy or girl. Not that it matters, by the way, and certainly there are some people who are just born gender ambiguous, and I've, you know, met lots of people who are hermaphrodites. They account for only about 1% of the population, but it does happen. But I'm talking about somebody who is sexually dimorphic. He's got, you know, very definitely feminine physical characteristics, and you're trying to downplay those as much as possible, so that you will be viewed in an asexual way. Now, I did specify female because that particular behavior doesn't tend to evidence itself with males. At least it's not as noticeable. Certainly, males are incest survivors too. The statistics nationally for the United States tend to be approximately 1 in 4 girls is sexually abused, 1 in 5 boys. So there's a lot of boys that are being sexually abused out there too. And they can turn into sexual anorexics or sexually promiscuous people in order to try to cope with that abuse as well. But you usually aren't going to be able to see outward signs of how they're trying to morph their appearance in order to either encourage or discourage potential suitors. Okay, so anyway, therapy. Therapy's a good place to start. The second thing that I really recommend is a wonderful book. It's called The Survivor's Guide to Sex, and it's written by Stacey Haynes. She's from San Francisco. She's a lesbian, and the book is awesome. It just has a really even-handed approach to both gay, bisexual, and heterosexual sex. It's written in terms that anybody of any gender persuasion and any gender period, any sexual orientation, is going to get a lot out of the book. It encompasses all sexual attractions as well. So if you happen to be somebody who is into polyamory or polyamory, many loves, meaning that you have a lot of sexual partners that you are in a committed relationship with, it's different from promiscuity. Promiscuity is rather indiscriminate. Polyamory is about forming long-term relationships with more than one person. Or perhaps you're into BDSM, bondage, discipline, sadomasochism. Again, you will find in this book a really open-minded approach to all those things. So, and it has exercises at the end of each chapter. And I had gone through probably a dozen years of therapy around incest and date rape issues, plus had become fully, multiply orgasmic at this point. So like I said, I'd made that journey from being frigid to multiply orgasmic. Thought I was having really, really hot sex. Thought I'd really covered that entire issue of recovering from incest and rape. And this book just took it to a much deeper place. So depending on where you're at, I think you could get a lot out of this book. But if you haven't actually been in therapy yet, it would be perhaps a bit rough to start with the book because it's going to go straight into certain premises that, you know, that you've gotten acquainted with the idea that it wasn't your fault that it happened, that you didn't do anything to deserve this, and just some basic things that you would want to have a firm understanding of before you start doing the exercises. Okay. Oftentimes, these are things that I recommend women look at. If you're having trouble enjoying your orgasms, if you're having trouble enjoying cunnilingus, cunnilingus in particular is about so much attention being paid to you. You're their center, your center stage. And in a lot of ways, it's a form of worship. And if you can look at it that way and feel deserving of it, it can be a beautiful thing. But if you feel insecure about your body, which a lot of women have been taught to feel really, you know, like maybe it smells down there or it tastes bad, or some women have never even looked at their vulvas, which, you know, you really need to do. Get a mirror out, look at your own vulva, become acquainted where all the parts are, know where your clitoris is, know where your vagina is, know where the urethra is, the urethra being the area where your urine comes out of. Find the perineum, you know, some people call it the taint, the area between your vagina and your rectum. And that area is rich with nerve endings. It's rich with, it's got a chakra there and a lot of energy centers there. So you can stimulate it through acupressure as well. So becoming acquainted with your body and knowing what it looks like and then loving it is very important. Women who worry about what they taste like, you're going to think that this is maybe a crazy suggestion, but this is something I have been doing since I was 18. And it's interesting because the pop icon, Madonna, I heard her talking about it one day, and she does the same thing I do, which is she sticks her finger into her vagina and then puts it in her mouth to see what flavor she is that day. And it's actually a pretty healthy thing to do. I mean, you know, it is your own bodily fluid, so you're not going to catch anything from yourself. And, I mean, it is possible that if you had a herpes outbreak down there and you put your finger in your mouth, you could spread the herpes outbreak. And the same thing with gonorrhea, by the way, because it is possible to have gonorrhea genitally, and then you could spread it to your tonsils. So, you know, barring any sexually transmitted infections, it is not the least bit dangerous in that it's not unsanitary. It might kind of freak you out a little bit or make you self-conscious. But what you're looking for is kind of a neutral taste. You don't want it to be too tart. In other words, not too sour. And you wouldn't want it to be necessarily too sweet. You're looking for the right pH, which is really important. And there's ways that you can, you know, make your bodily fluids taste better by taking better care of your health and making sure that you got plenty of healthy probiotics. And you can actually go to the health food store and buy suppositories for your vaginal tract that are probiotics, just like the probiotics that come in your yogurt that you want to eat for your digestive tract. Well, there's probiotics that you want to have in your vaginal tract as well. And they will make you taste wonderful. And, of course, hygiene is important too. But good hygiene means do not wash that area with soap. Do not use scented douches. As a matter of fact, don't douche at all. There are very rare instances where you are so sick and have such a buildup that you may want to douche. And if you are going to douche, I would say it needs to be kind of a medical emergency. And then in that case, I would recommend a betadine douche, you know, medicated douche, something that's going to actually change your pH. The other thing you can do is douche with vinegar, because vinegar can shift your pH in the right direction as well. But stay away from all those perfumed things. What they do is they strip you of the natural probiotics that will keep you smelling and tasting delicious. And then you're hooked. You have to buy one douche after another. So it's very unhealthy and it's counterproductive. You're going to wind up smelling and tasting worse than you did. So get off the douches. Okay, so let's summarize some of the things that you can do to feel good about cunnilingus. First and foremost, examine your sexual history. If you think you have any abuse issues at all, get professional help. If you've already gotten professional help and you're still feeling like you need to iron out some of the kinks, or iron in a few of the kinks, as the case may be, go get Stacey Haynes' book, The Survivor's Guide to Sex, and work all of the exercises in the book. It will transform your sex life, absolutely. And then, you know, if you don't have incest or date rape issues, the next thing is to basically just make friends with your body, and in particular, your genitalia. So get the mirror out, get the hand mirror out, turn on the lights, take a look at your genitalia. You know, if you find yourself feeling a little self-conscious or nervous, just practice doing some deep breathing while you're looking at yourself. And then when you feel comfortable, you can use your other free hand to just kind of explore the various parts of your vagina. You want to know where the labia minora are. Those are the small inner lips, where the labia majora are, the outer larger lips, the ones that are covered with hair. You want to know where your clitoris is, and your clitoris has got a little glands, you know, up at the top of your vulva. But it actually has these huge legs that extend just under the surface of the vulva. So you can trace the legs, or cura, you know, it's spelled K-R-U-R-A, cura, the legs of the clitoris that extend all the way down to your perineum. And if you experiment with a very light touch, you're going to find out that you have a lot of different sensitivities. And the other thing you want to do is familiarize yourself with your own G-spot. And you can see the G-spot by using a hand mirror. All you have to do is kind of push out, like if you were trying to have a bowel movement, and so you're like pushing down, then part of the G-spot will actually come, kind of bob up to the entrance of your vagina. And it is completely different than the rest of your vagina, because if you put your finger inside your stuff, you're going to feel a lot of smooth walls, just very, very smooth tissue. And but if you direct your touch to the top of your vagina, this would be what lies closest to your clitoris, then you're going to feel something that kind of feels like the roof of your mouth a little bit. It's kind of bumpy and ridgy. And if you touch it enough, it's actually going to start to become more erect. It will actually harden because there's erectile tissue buried deep in there, not unlike the erectile tissue in a man's penis, that is going to cause that area to start becoming aroused and harder. So look for your G-spot, and don't have any assumptions about what should feel good or shouldn't feel good, because for some women, touching the G-spot directly is very uncomfortable, and for other women, it's just this side of heaven. And it's also a really good way to get to female ejaculation. And here, I think, is one of the biggest obstacles to enjoying cunnilingus is women are afraid that they are going to urinate. And what you're actually afraid of there is not so much urination. It's female ejaculation that most women are actually afraid of, even though they don't know it. So if you happen to know that you're a female ejaculator, you may have some reason to be afraid of female ejaculating if somebody is going down on you. You may have had a negative experience with a man who didn't know what female ejaculate was, and maybe he got freaked out, and that kind of freaked you out. And if that's true, then I recommend having a conversation with your partner. I have done that myself, and sometimes I've been disappointed in what the partner said, like, oh, I would hate it if somebody came in my face. And what that tells me is that we're sexually incompatible, because I only want to be with somebody who finds my nectar, my female ejaculate, something that's very, very valuable and precious and something that they would want to drink, frankly. And if they don't feel that way about it, then I'm not interested in making love to them. But, you know, you can make whatever decision works for you, but it would be better if you know up front whether your partner enjoys female ejaculation or not. It will help you let go, or it may help you decide that you don't want to have cunnilingus with this person. So get the mirror, make friends, find out what your terrain is, and, you know, what does it look like? What does it look like, and do I like the way it looks? You know, I think that what you're going to find is that you're very beautiful. Almost no vulva is the same. No two are the same. They're like snowflakes. They're just, all of them are different, and they're all very beautiful in their own way, and there's a great deal of diversity, and yet there's hundreds of thousands of people who look just like you. So, and that's also a comforting thought. And if you have trouble looking at vulvas, you might want to check out beautiful artistic renditions of vulvas. Look for some of Betty Dodson's work, D-O-D-S-O-N, Betty Dodson. Betty Dodson is one of the original masturbation teachers. She used to have, I think she might still have, these workshops where women get together and learn how to masturbate in front of each other. So, you know, you want to become a little more comfortable with your body and familiar with its taste, its smell, its scent, so that you start liking it. And if you like it, it'll be easier for you to imagine that somebody else would love that part of you as well. Finally, I think one of the big blocks that women have about cunnilingus, again, we're going back to the idea that you are going to be the center of attention. I think because of the way a lot of women grow up in the culture, thinking that somehow or another their pleasure is not as important, it makes me think of how my mother used to do dinner. You know, she would fix dinner and then serve everybody, and our whole family would already be eating, and she'd still be, like, trying to put the dishes away or get something off the stove before it burned or something like that. But she'd serve all of us. We'd all get to eat. And then sometimes she was so busy in the kitchen, she wouldn't even sit down to eat. She would kind of eat on the run. So she'd finish off a little here and a little there and just keep going. And that, you know, is, in a lot of ways, that's a very loving, efficient mother, somebody who always puts her children first and puts herself last. But I don't actually recommend it because I think that, you know, first of all, you're teaching your daughters to be that kind of a mother, and that means you're kind of sentencing them to a life of doing without and putting, you know, kind of being self-effacing and putting everybody else first, which if you don't take good care of yourself, you don't have much to give. So you're always coming from a place of deficit. So this kind of attitude of being there for other people kind of goes into the sex life as well. And you'll find that a lot of women are very interested in how they can give their man a great blowjob. But, you know, when it comes down to just being able to lay back, relax, and enjoy being serviced, if you want to look at it that way, being pleasured, this creates a lot of anxiety. So get over that. I mean, just, you know, start indulging in some other areas. You'll find that behaviors kind of feed into each other. So if you can learn to start pampering yourself in other ways, whether it's a bubble bath or going to your favorite day spa or just taking time out to meditate, you know, sleeping in for another half hour, whatever it is that makes you feel like you're important to yourself, that is a really good way to start embracing your own orgasms and your own sexuality and start pulling in the kind of sexual experiences that you want. Okay, so first of all, just being able to accept you doing that for yourself. Then secondly, how do you accept allowing somebody else to do that for you? And again, these things kind of feed into each other. So when you find yourself not accepting help in other departments of your life, I would challenge you to start letting people do things for you. Not exclusively. I mean, you know, you don't want to be dependent or anything like that. But basically to allow pleasure. That's the big thing. Pleasure and allowing yourself to be the center of attention. And these are difficult things for a lot of women. They really are. I can remember it being difficult for me. Oh, and one other thing that deserves mentioning, and this is very specific to women, and it has to do with how do you look when you are being pleasured? And in this day and age of, you know, instant porn, it's everywhere. It's on the internet. Everybody's into porn. When I go and speak at the colleges now, about 60% of all the women in the world, well, I don't know about all the women in the world, but all the 20-year-old women in the world, about 60% of them are watching porn now. So it's not just the domain of lonely males. Married people are watching porn. Single girls in college are watching porn. Porn is very popular, which I think is great, except for two really important things. There's just like one type of porn out there. And I think we need more producers. We need more production houses so that we could get more variety, and then people wouldn't think there was just one right way to have sex either. And then, of course, the other problem with a lot of the porn is that all the bodies have been grossly modified so that you're looking at, you know, these huge triple E breasts that the woman, you know, has got to have something to hold them up because they're about ready to break her neck. Or, you know, I've got the really, really long fingernails, strange hair extensions, plastic surgery that makes people look more like cartoon characters than actual human beings. And the sex acts that they're doing in most mainstream porn are pantomimed. They're not real sex acts, so they're not having actual orgasms, you know, except for, of course, the men who are really ejaculating. But a lot of the women have even learned how to fake female ejaculation. So there's a lot of phony sex that is being conducted strictly for your benefit so that you can watch it. But because of the constraints that are on them, they want to get a particular angle, they want to get a particular lighting, and that requires a lot of times the porn actors being in some very uncomfortable positions, you know, where they're trying to hold their hair back or they're trying to stick their ass up in the air so that you can get a really good shot of the penetration that's going on. And anyway, since I have friends who have worked for mainstream porn production companies, I know that this stuff is true because they tell me it is. I personally, the porn that I've done was all amateur, and therefore it was all from the heart. And I'm not really interested in all this fake stuff, but a lot of people are, and the only bad thing about it is that it's basically kind of teaching people that, you know, it's teaching you inaccurate things about two things, sex and the human body. So you have, you know, like some very unrealistic expectations about performance, too. I mean, you know, they're going to take as much time as they need to in order for the man to be able to give them the money shot a couple of times. But what you don't know is how many hours might have transpired or how many fluffers it took to get him there. So they have unrealistic expectations on both sides of the gender equation as well. But anyway, we're talking about women enjoying cunnilingus, and for that purposes, I just want to encourage women to be, you know, aware of the fact that sex is not, unless you are getting paid to make a pornographic film, then it shouldn't be about, oh, is my hair messed up? Is my lipstick messed up? Does my face look funny when I squinch it up this way? You know, am I sweating? These are the kind of things that can run through a woman's mind while she's trying to relax and have an orgasm. And I think that's another reason that it might be very difficult to enjoy cunnilingus. You know, at least if you were doing it doggy style, he wouldn't be able to see your face, and then you could screw it up any way you want. But while he's performing cunnilingus, or she's performing cunnilingus on you, you're definitely you're out there where they're going to be able to see your face. And so that can be intimidating for some people. But, you know, this might work for you. I have recommended this before, and for some people it does, for some people it doesn't. But one trick, I think, to getting over self-consciousness is actually just film yourself. You can film yourself masturbating. You don't need to have a partner and then worry about all the legal complications about having a sex tape out there with somebody else in it. You can just film yourself, and you might be surprised. You might really fall in love with the person that you see on the screen, and that's a good thing. Let yourself fall in love with yourself, because your primary sexual relationship is with you, not with other people. It's with you. And learning how to really enjoy having sex with yourself, learning how to really adore your own body, learning how to embrace your own pleasure, and learning how to let go of yourself so that you're not self-conscious, all these things push you further down the road of being able to enjoy sex with other human beings. But it really does start with you and your attitudes about yourself. And, of course, it goes, I don't want it to go without saying, but, you know, there are some techniques that don't really work that well, and there's some things that actually are kind of uncomfortable. For instance, one of the things I hate is when a man is drooling, you know, and the spit and saliva is rolling down the crack of your ass. That's really disgusting to me. Some people may like it. I hate it. If you have a partner who's doing something that you find really distracting or disgusting during cunnilingus, then You'll want to communicate that to him, and I do not recommend communicating these kind of things while you're naked or in the bedroom or in bed or having sex. These are the kind of conversations that are best had fully clothed in a neutral place so that hopefully people won't feel too vulnerable. Because if you start giving people critiques about their sexual technique while they're having sex with you, that's a good way to not only ruin that moment, but ruin a lot of moments to come. Okay, so I'm going to wrap this up, and I think I'll do that by just summarizing once again. Find out if this is all about enjoying cunnilingus as a woman, how to let yourself go and really enjoy allowing somebody else to perform cunnilingus on you. First and foremost, just, you know, get clear on whether or not you are surviving any kind of sexual abuse. If so, get therapy. If you've already had therapy, get Stacey Haynes' book, The Survivor's Guide to Sex, Work the Exercises. This will help you recover more. If you don't have any incest or date rape issues, work on the body image. Get a mirror, become familiar with your body, and start masturbating with yourself. Maybe get a video camera, actually videotape it so that you can see that there's really nothing to be afraid of and you can allow somebody else to make you feel that wonderful too. And that's it. I'll see you back here next week. And until then, have fun doing your homework.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.